This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week we are brought to you again by the East Coast Mind Jam, which will be held from June 24th through 26th, and now as a special deal for the Magic Word listeners only, you get $50 off of your registration now through April 30th, so this is just a limited time offer. You might want to scoop up on that as quickly as you can. The next day following the Mind Jam on Monday, June 27th, will be Magic Business University, and here again until April 30th, you get half off. That is, you're going to only pay $20 instead of $40 for the morning session. If you wish to stay over for that and learn more about that, you can go to magicbusinessuniversity.com. And to learn more about the East Coast Mind Jam, of course, that's at eastcoastmindjam.com. Well, this week as our guest, we have Norman Beck. I've known Norman for, golly, such a long time, back to the 70s, I guess, when he was still in high school or just going to college. But we've been friends for a long time, and he is someone who's kind of what I would call an underground magician, and he is fairly well unknown as far as what his skills are, which are really good, and he doesn't really lecture very often. So he is someone that, unless you're a member of the Society of American Magicians and have been reading his columns over the last several years in the MUM magazine, that he may not be as well known to you because he doesn't attend many magic conventions, or as I said, he doesn't lecture very often or really speak a lot to other magicians necessarily. He just kind of does a lot of really cool stuff. And very interesting guy, too, that he gets to rub shoulders with some of the greats while he's playing in bridge tournaments. And I say some of the greats. I'm talking about Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. Yeah, some of the wealthiest people in the world. And does card tricks for him, too, by the way, along the way. So, anyhow, I'm not going to spoil too much more of this fascinating conversation that we have because he's been living quite an interesting life. And I think you will learn a lot from this podcast with Norman Beck here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and today we have as our guest Mr. Norman Beck. Hi there, Norm.
Hey, good afternoon.
And I should say also the writer or the author of You Don't Say. Isn't that your column? You have a column in the MUM magazine.
I do. It's called Inside Straight.
Inside Straight. Now, you used to have a column, I thought, that was called
I've been thinking.
Okay. How did that evolve?
We mean, how did it first start?
Well, I guess, yeah, it kind of went from one to the other. But I mean, yeah, let's just so that way the listeners can have a better idea of kind of who you are a little bit that with that.
So when John Mooring took over and became editor of MUM, he asked me if I would like to write a column, and I said, I don't know what I'd write about. He said, well, what have you been thinking about? I said, well, I've been thinking about a lot of things. He said, well, why don't you write about what you've been thinking about? So I said, okay, so I'll write about what I've been thinking about. And that's how it started.
Kind of random thoughts, whatever you were thinking.
At the time. Mm-hmm. The ones that I could publish. You know, there were several that we couldn't put in print. But anyway, and then Mike Close took over, and I continued to write I've been thinking. But then I decided I wanted to sort of change the focus of the article to something called Inside Straight, basically on how to get along or do things that might or might not be easily done. Okay, so anyway, we changed it to Inside Straight. So basically, that's kind of like a Dale Carnegie-type column now where I write about everything from how to get a better rental car, to better service at a restaurant, to get upgraded to a suite, just how to get along better in life.
So it's not an Inside Straight just talking about card tricks and things
at all? No, absolutely not. Almost never about card tricks. It's mm-hmm. almost always about how to manipulate people without appearing to be manipulative.
How long has that column been running with the new name then?
Oh, Scott, I'm not sure. Maybe 2 years, two and a half, three. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure when we made the transition.
Yeah.
No, I write one every month or so.
Now, I was going to ask you about that. Do you do that each month? Do you keep some in advance, or how do you meet your deadlines?
I write whenever the mood strikes me and try to keep ahead.
Yeah.
So far, I haven't missed one yet. So.
Yeah. Yeah, years ago, I used to write a column called Scott's Thoughts, and a lot of times those were just my thoughts being downloaded on Saturday mornings. I would, from like 7 in the morning until noon or something, I would just jot down a bunch of things I've been thinking about during that week, kind of like what you were talking about. Because each week that we had a round table of guys who would meet on Tuesdays, and a lot of times whoever was working the Magic Island would come and join us also. And there'd be a lot of interesting guys who would be coming into town and who were passing through working trade shows or whatever. I remember talking with these guys and kind of picking their brains and learning a lot about the inside stuff, like you're talking about, you know, then too, like with Kerry Pollack and Vito Lupo and the amazing Randy and so many people who had, you know, kind of shared lunch with us and broken bread. And then I thought about some of the things they were talking about, working cruise ships or corporate shows or television commercials or whatever else. And then on Saturday, I'd kind of, after I'd let that percolate a little while, you know, you really, so whenever you write, do you have something in mind, or you just kind of let your free form of thought
go to the page? It's been, if I don't plagiarize it or steal it, generally it's something I just think up off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. No, that's not actually true. Most of the time it's some actual event, mm-hmm. that either where I was a hero or I was, I did very poorly, mm-hmm. and because I'll learn a lot more when I make a mistake than when I do well. Mm-hmm. So it's, if I make a mistake or something doesn't go the way it should have gone, how could I make it gone better? Or what can I do? What trick? What maneuver? What ploy, mm-hmm. can I do that's not really devious? Mm-hmm. Or I shouldn't say, or maybe it is devious, but not in a bad way.
Sure.
I would never do anything that's
illegal or immoral.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you said immoral, so maybe illegal, but not immoral. Were you a security or police officer for a while?
A long time ago.
I had told this story on the podcast a while back, and I had referenced you and talked about saying that you used to let off a person. Matter of fact, I think it was when I was talking to Greg Wilson in our first podcast back number 268 in December, when he was talking about getting out of traffic tickets, and you said if somebody can make you laugh, you'd let one person off a day. Tell me that story.
Oh, I was never a really hard-nosed policeman. I mean, I let a lot of people off, but if they ever got me to laugh, I could never take somebody to jail if I was laughing.
But there was somebody I remember said something about a red light.
Oh, guy, I stopped him and I said, "You know why I stopped you?" And he said, "No." I said, "Well, didn't you see that red light back there?" He said, "I didn't even see the house." That made me laugh.
Yeah,
he did not get a ticket.
Yeah,
I mean, my dad was appreciative of that.
Yeah. There are so many different directions and things I want to talk about, but I want to kind of go back so that way that listeners can understand and appreciate our relationship also that goes back to Tulsa, Oklahoma, back in, I guess, when you were still in high school. I mean, I feel
back in the early 70s.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you're a Texan now and refer to yourself that I mean, you unstrapped your mattress from the roof of your car and moved from Oklahoma.
Right. 21 years in August.
In August that you've been here in Texas. And when you've been were here, were you a police officer in Oklahoma or in Texas?
No, I was in Tulsa from 82 to 87.
It was? Okay.
Yeah. Then I left and moved to Arkansas and moved from Arkansas back to Oklahoma and from Oklahoma back to here.
And another thing, too, I think is kind of interesting is that you're – profession, what you do now, is in working with insurance company. Is that right?
It's really not an insurance company. I work for a company that we provide prize coverage on large prizes all over the world. So
yeah.
Anything you can imagine to give away large amounts of money,
yeah.
I've done. Some of the things I've done, you can't imagine. Some really weird, unbelievably strange, off the wall.
Like what?
Well, most recent that was strange was guess how many clown noses are in a car to win the car. That was one of the more strange ones. We had a guy once that sold a reality TV show that if you tied him up with a 100-foot piece of rope and he could not escape, you would win $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So he sold the program, but he didn't have $1 million to put up in the... The TV people really felt like he should have the $1 million in case he lost.
Right. So they bought the
premium? No, we would not sell to it. Mm-hmm. I would not.
I wouldn't either because I know how to tie up a person.
Yeah, well, that's not the issue. You can't tie a person up with a 100-foot piece of rope that they can't escape from.
If you use the whole 100 feet, you can't.
You have to use the whole 100
feet.
Oh,
okay.
That was a stipulation, but you cannot do it. Mm-hmm. As he told me, he said, this is the safest your money's ever been. He said, I can always get out.
Yeah.
I said, yes, I know. That's why I can't insure you. And he said, I cover you, not insure. He said, why can't you cover me? I said, because if you could always get out, you could always stay in. He said, I don't understand. I said, well, if...
You'd be paid off.
He said, if the guy tied you up and you didn't escape, I pay him the $1 million, and he gives you $500,000, and he keeps $500,000, I'm out $1 million. He said, I never would think like that. I said, that's why you get tied up for a living. That's why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Well, that was one. The Mir space station hitting the target in the Pacific, we'd had to buy everybody in the United States a taco, finding Bigfoot alive, paying off millions of dollars if the end of the world came.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know how I was going to process that claim if I was dead.
If nobody was left.
But that's what they... Finding Bigfoot alive, finding Elvis Presley alive, aliens landing on a...
I mean, there are no actuary tables that you can process this, so...
We use the SWAG method a lot.
SLAG.
SWAG.
SWAG, yeah. Some wild...
Silly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, most of it we can figure out, but on some of those are really quiet.
I remember this so well that we were back at the 4F convention some years ago, and you had handed out these scratch-off tickets to everybody in the audience, and you said, I want you guys, because I feel that you're some of the most creative people in the world. We got about 200 people here, and combined minds, I think, could just come up with some great ideas. I want to find out if there is a way to beat this system. That is, can you see what's below that without actually scratching it off to know which ones you should scratch off to be a winner? And then you just kind of left it at that. And I remember people talking later saying, what's this guy doing? Trying to figure out how to beat the system? Is he going to want to make the money on that? And then you had to come back and say, let me kind of tell you exactly who I am and what I'm trying to do here. I'm the one who underwrites this kind of premium and to see whether or not it can be done or not. And if you guys can't figure it out, then maybe the odds are that no one else is going to be able to do it either. And so you had to qualify yourself as to who you were.
Right. Yeah. That's been a long time ago. That's been close to probably 15, 18 years ago.
Yeah, so you've been with this company for a long time.
It'll be 21 years in August.
And you travel all over the country or the world or what?
Yeah, in parts of Iowa.
In parts? When you really have to go deep, yeah.
Right.
With that, there's a lot of wild things. And since that you said there are just kind of some swags that you're having to make on that, I mean, I would imagine like your most common thing would be like hole-in-one contests and things like that. Isn't that right? Or somebody you have to...
I wouldn't say we have anything that's common. I mean, they're all different. I mean, so in that respect, they're all the same. But we don't have anything that's one thing in specifically that's our bread and butter. I mean, we believe in doing whatever somebody wants. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Anywhere from 42 cents is the smallest thing I've ever covered to billions, the biggest.
A billion?
Yeah, and all points in between. Mm-hmm. The most money on a single day was $2.5 billion.
Billion with a B.
That's the most money I ever left the house with in a checkbook was $2.5 billion.
And you were prepared to write that. What was that for?
It was a very involved golf tournament up outside of Detroit back mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. So... where every hole was worth $1 million to every golfer.
Okay.
That's not common. I mean, that's like a one-off. I mean, that's like something we did. We did it 2 years in a row, but mm-hmm. but that's not. $1 billion promotions are pretty
few and far
small.
Apart.
Yeah, they're not many people want to put up the money that it costs to have that much coverage.
How much would that cost for something like that? I mean,
I'm not the actual person that figures that out. I don't really know. That's mm-hmm. not the end of the business I'm involved in. In fact, I don't even deal with that at all. Mm-hmm. So,
Yours is just trying to figure the game?
I'm just trying to figure out, make sure that we don't get cheated and make sure that everything's run the way it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of like Steve Forte, I guess, that goes into a casino making sure no one's cheating at the card table.
I wouldn't put myself in the same category as him. I mean, he's in a level above all the rest of us.
So. Yeah, Ron Connolly and all those guys.
Yeah, both those two guys. I'm not even in their same league. I mean, they're totally different, but the same, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Well, what's the most that you've ever actually paid out? I mean, I assume that a time or two, you must have paid $1 million or $100,000 or whatever.
In the course of, since the company's been in business, we paid out a total of over $291 million.
$291 million. Wow.
Total. I mean, that's not on one single client.
Sure.
That's total. The biggest single thing that we ever paid money out on would have been Lance Armstrong. It was $11 million.
For Lance Armstrong? What was that for?
It was a incentive based promotion on it. Every time he won the Tour de France,
yep,
the money went up in value.
Well, now, what happened at the end once that he got those things revoked? Did you have to try to get the money back?
Yeah, and that was that issue is really not something I can...
I know.
It's resolved. I can't really go into any details on that.
But, fair enough.
But it's... We've...
Resolved it.
We've resolved it, yeah.
Okay, that's fair enough. I know you can't talk legally about that, but that is kind of interesting to think that that was paid out, and then you later find that someone has cheated to get that. Did you know Lance? Did you meet him, or did you get a talk with anybody within the Tour de France?
Over the course of time, yeah, there were some people that came around that we talked to.
You had to interact with. Yeah, I would think you would. Yeah, yeah. For sure. That's pretty interesting. Well, of course, what some people may not know about you is your underground status, which is why what underground means. You know, they talk about Roger Clouse as being an underground guy, but I'd say that he was so well-known he kind of escaped that underground status some long time ago. But you're one of those guys kind of like with Chuck Smith and some others who are not as well-known but do a lot of really great card moves. And your specialty really is in playing cards, right? Would you say?
Yeah, yes, that would be true. I don't really consider myself an underground guy. I mean, I'm very accessible.
None of you do.
I'd say I'm very accessible. I mean, if you know how to get a hold of me. I just don't get out much.
Yeah.
To be quite honest. I don't have a website.
Like the lecture you're giving here in Houston is like a one-off type of thing. You don't go on tour.
No, I don't tweet. I don't Twitter. I don't have a website. I don't set up and do many magic conventions.
You go to the castle and work a time or two.
I try to go to the castle every year, take a week off to go out. But I just don't get out much. Mm-hmm. I have a full-time job, so it's really difficult for me.
Sure.
That's why I don't work a whole lot of corporate events. I mean, I'll take some, but they're
pretty few
and far between it because I'm not going to take a job and then have to cancel because I have to go do my day job, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to sacrifice on my day job. So I maybe do 4 or 5 lectures a year if I'm lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do a lecture, I think, in New York in June and do this one. I did a lecture at the castle, but I don't.
I remember one thing that you talked about doing some years ago, and I don't remember if it was a lecture, you talked about it at Fechner's, or you just told me or whatever. It was a funny gag where you're stealing bottles of beer off the table.
Actually, it was when I was in college. I didn't steal.
Mike, that's
a really harsh word. Well, you shouldn't.
Well, you weren't borrowing it either.
No, that's not. I didn't borrow it, and I didn't steal it. I had developed a technique where that we used to have a place called Babbo's Laundry and Delicatessen, and on Tuesdays and Thursdays it was $2 pitchers of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And we would wait until someone got a fresh pitcher and they had taken the first drink, and let's say it was 3/4 full, and our pitcher was down to about 1/4 to 1/8.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go over and do magic and misdirect them, and we would switch pitchers. We would cold deck their pitcher a full beer for our pitcher that was almost empty so we could drink for less amount of money. But we didn't really steal it. We just switched it out. But that was back when I was young.
Well,
I don't do that anymore.
Well, that's funny because that's not even the direction I was going. What I was thinking about was the bottle of beer where when you're leaning over and you take the bottle and then later you pull the, you know, say I got something for you and you pull the handkerchief off their bottle. Say, here's a bottle of beer for you.
Like the Bob Reed bottle production. Yeah. I did that as a running gag when I worked at restaurants.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, I would steal.
You don't have to admit the other thing.
Well, I figure the statutes run on that. I mean, I don't drink beer anymore, so we're probably okay. But when I worked at restaurants, I would steal the kids, their drink off the table. I had a method for every single trick in my close-up set. There was always one moment when I could steal their drink, no matter what the trick was, whether I was doing sponge balls or a card trick or the $100 bill switch. There was one moment when I knew that I could divert their eyes and steal their glass.
Yeah, now when you're saying it wasn't just a bottle of beer, it could be a glass of beer.
Glass of beer,
mixed
bottle,
drink,
whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was my running, because I paid my way through college doing magic in a restaurant and being a waiter. And so that was when I learned that technique.
What was one of your favorite methods of approaching a table? I mean, I hear guys are saying, well, did you lose a knife? Here's a red knife. Nope, how about a white knife? Or I'll say you got you dropped a bill, and then you change it or whatever, or that you have some sort of an entree, or do you just come in and say, I'm a magician here to magic for you, or what was your approach?
I had several. One that I used to like real well was, let's say it was a four-top, and there were kids at the table.
Mm-hmm.
I would walk up to the table, dressed obviously like a magician, and I would walk up and say, excuse me, but has the magician been by yet to see you all?
Mm-hmm.
And they would say no. And I'd say, if you'd like to see him, I can go get him and have him come over and do some magic for you, if it's okay with your mom and dad. And they would ask, and they'd say, yeah, it's fine. Now I would turn around and walk away from the table and then turn back around, walk back up to the table and say, excuse me, they just came and told me you'd like to see the magician. Which was sort of incongruent, but it was funny and got a laugh.
Yeah.
Another one that I used to use all the time was, excuse me, folks, let me introduce myself. My name's Norman. I'm the house magician. The owner, Mr. Kreth, has hired me as a way of saying thank you to come and do magic for you folks. It's free. It's on the house. That's why they call me the house magician. Would you all like to see some magic and then start in?
Mm-hmm.
I used to do that a lot. Those were two that I used a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, if a waiter was taking their order, I would walk up to them and I would say to the waiter, did you tell them about me yet?
Mm-hmm.
And that waiter would look at me and they say, no. I said, well, aren't you going to tell them about me while I'm standing here? Go ahead and tell them who I am so they don't think I'm some stranger coming over trying to bum a free drink or something.
Yeah.
And then the waiter would say, I have the waiter introduce me. And that was always nice. I always found it was really great if the waiter or the manager would
introduce
it for me. It was much better than going up cold. But I can go up cold. I mean, I can go up to anybody. Have and do and will. And
well, it's kind of like having an MC for you at a restaurant. Say, please welcome our close-up magician this evening, Norman Beck.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, I also like to ask, when people are working in restaurants, what was your philosophy regarding tips? And did you take them? How did you go about getting them? Did you accept them or give them back? What was your thought? Or did it depend upon where you were working?
That changed over the years, and I have different thoughts about
mm-hmm.
what I've done. There was a time in my life I was pretty... I'm not going to say unethical, but I did things that now I would find abhorrent.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of people who would almost steal the money. Basically, they'd have it in their hand and not give it back.
I never did that. I had much subtler, better ways that worked just as well.
Okay.
And I'm not going to share all those because I don't want to pass my bad habits on to anybody who might be out there listening.
Yeah.
Let's just say that I knew how to get the money really, really well. Really well. And yeah, it would be almost, I'm not going to say it. I would, if later in life and today, if I see a guy making an obvious effort to give me a tip, where he makes an obvious effort of pulling his billfold out,
yep.
and it's clear that he's trying to give me a tip,
mm-hmm.
I will wave that off.
Hmm.
Because a guy that does that is uncomfortable, and he doesn't know if he should or he shouldn't.
Yeah.
The savvy traveler, businessman, a real sophisticate, is going to be much more subtle. If a guy is really subtle, I always take the money.
Yeah, you shake your hand, put money in your hand.
I always take the money when they're subtle. When they're clumsy, mm-hmm. I always wave it off.
And you'll say, no thanks, this is compliments to the management here.
Yeah, I won't totally wave it off. I'll say that's not necessary, it's on the house.
Mm-hmm.
If they continue, I always take the money because I think it's, I think you've insulted them if you turn it down.
I agree with that.
If they've made an effort,
mm-hmm.
and I never, if you get a tip, don't ever look to see how much it is. If
right.
you're going to do it, take it, put it in your pocket.
Right.
Say thank you very much. I had a guy at the castle this last time that went out of his way to give me a tip.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I did not look to see what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was obvious he wanted me to have it.
Mm-hmm.
But I never do anything to solicit a tip, to ask for a tip. I don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
If you see me working in a restaurant, I'm being paid well enough that I don't
need that tip.
The tip's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, sometimes it's almost as if that you're a street person standing on the corner with a sign, you know, saying, tip me or whatever, after you've kind of walked over to the table. And if
I've done that.
Too obvious.
I've done that.
Well, I remember years ago, many years ago, likewise, I had a little button that says, I accept tips. And I had that on my close-up pad, but I had something on top of that to begin with. So it wasn't until partway into the routine that I would move the napkins or whatever, and then they could see that little button there, and they'd think, oh, I guess he does. So that was kind of a more than a subtle hint to say that maybe I should get rid of it. I got rid of that idea probably 15 years ago myself, but there are different ways, again, of trying to solicit that. As long as you feel good about it and they feel good about giving it to you. It's kind of like, I guess, being conned. People have said, it seems like it was Harry Anderson was talking about that you don't mind giving your money to someone who has a beautiful con as opposed to somebody feeling like you got gypped out of something, you know, and cheated.
I don't really know anything about cons. I don't really understand them or haven't really studied them or learned anything about them. I don't know nothing about cons, but it's something I'm thinking about studying and taking up at some point.
But wouldn't that have something directly to do with your profession?
Never thought about it, but it's possible.
I think my leg is longer than the other. You've been pulling it here.
Huh. I don't know where you would get that, but it's possible. It's something I'm going to think about.
In the future. Close-up and doing cards and stuff like that, do card tricks actually enter in much at all into what you're doing with your profession then right now?
In my magic profession, they're involved every day.
Well, yeah.
But
yeah.
Are you talking about my work?
With your work, right, as far as the...
I'm not going to say the card tricks, but sometimes the methodology and
right.
the thought process, absolutely.
That's what I was getting at.
I look at it, every single thing I do, I look at from a magician's eye, and how could this we be cheated, or how could we make this safe? So in that respect, yeah. And I do quite a bit of magic in my day job as far as for clients and
do you?
Customers and stuff when I'm traveling.
They know you're a magician. They expect you to do something.
Depends. Sometimes I don't tell them I'm a magician. Mm-hmm. It depends on what the context is. As an example, if I'm doing a promotion inside a casino that involves poker or blackjack, I'm not going to tell them I'm a magician.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to associate the two together. But if it's, say, a Kiwanis Club and it's fishing, then, yeah, I don't mind doing that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I use magic a lot as a key to open doors that oftentimes are locked. And the magic will act as a key to get me in places that I couldn't necessarily get in.
It certainly goes through the gatekeeper. A lot of times that I have found that when I was in my business profession life, that there would be someone who seemed to be rather cold at the front door, basically, or it was the assistant or secretary or somebody.
And especially after in Chicago, I find that to be very true.
Really, in that area?
Very cold up there.
But if you break the ice and you do something, it's kind of like, oh, well, he'll be with you in a few minutes. And they'll open up so much more if you actually share something with them and do a trick for them. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. And so do you always carry a deck of cards with you? Pretty much whenever you're traveling?
No.
Surely. So what do you do whenever you break the ice?
Two.
Oh. Okay. There, yeah. Pull my leg a little longer again.
Yeah, I always carry at least two, always.
Got a backup deck?
Yeah, that's just on my person. I always have three or four in my brief. I mean, I'm you're not going to find me without cards ever.
Mm-hmm.
I carry them all the time.
Are you a collector? I mean, there are so many different cards. I just spoke with
collector
Alex Pandrea.
In what respect?
Well, I was going to say, I talked with Alex Pandrea recently, who is the proprietor of the House of Cards, and he puts out cards all the time. There are different Kickstarter campaigns out there trying to raise money for new cards, new decks. And so I'm asking about being a collector of playing cards.
Not really. I mean, I don't think...
You actually use them. You don't buy them to collect them and put them up on a shelf or something.
No, it's like guns. If I'm going to buy them, I'm going to use them. I'm not going to just buy them to look at them. I mean, mm-hmm. I've got, you know, I think that some of them are very nice and they're very clever. And in fact, I just bought a deck that was marked, not because I just wanted to figure out what the markings were. It wasn't because
you're going to use it to mark.
Not necessarily, mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm. It's like somebody who's really good with a handgun. It doesn't really matter what you hand them.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be pretty accurate. If you give them a Smith & Wesson, 40 caliber, you give them a 32, they're going to be pretty accurate regardless.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same way with somebody who's really good at entertainment deck of cards. Unless you just hand me a brick,
mm-hmm.
I'll be able to get by with whatever you give me.
Right.
So I think they're mainly just out there for people to make money.
It seems that way. And what I was thinking is, if you're using what I think is not your typical or normal deck of cards, let's say like a accepted bicycle deck or whatever, and you're handing it to someone to shuffle, and it's a little bit kind of funny, particularly if the pips are different colors or something. I mean, where they've been reversed. I've seen black hearts and red spades, for an example, that it gets to be confusing for real people.
Well, a lot of the magic I do is for... really, really sophisticated card players. I'm talking about the best in the world.
Oh, that's right. You have played bridge with these guys.
So I've done, not only I play with them, but I've done a lot of magic for the best players in the world. And magicians are nuts. If you think that you can do certain card tricks for people that really play cards and fool them, you're totally... You're crazy because you won't, not only not fool them, you'll make a fool of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Specific tricks, for instance, that you can't do for a card player. You cannot do any trick with an Elmsley count. You're crazy. So you count three cards as four and you show the jack of clubs twice.
Yeah.
Card player's gonna call you every time.
Sure.
You do Easy Brown's thought up cards across. Uh-huh. And all of the cards change. You didn't fool them because they're going to recognize that those aren't the same cards that you showed them.
Mm-hmm.
So really sophisticated card players, you have to change your thought process. And it just doesn't work. I mean, I used to, when I was in college and I didn't have any money, which the only thing that's changed is I'm not in college anymore. But I used to hitchhike to bridge tournaments. I didn't have any money. I would hitchhike. I would get there. I would talk to the lady or the man who ran the tournament and get them to give me free entries. In return, I'd do a magic show and be allowed to pass the hat. So I would basically was working the streets inside these. But bridge players, the people that play really serious, are some of the most influential, wealthy people in the world. So.
And you have master points?
I do have some of those, yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk about some of the people on air that you played with?
Well, I mean, there have been.
You've told me aside,
people,
but I mean.
Well, no, I mean, there's people. I mean, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Jimmy Kane, Ace Greenberg. I mean, Alan Greenberg, who used to go to Fechter's, was at one time was the number one guy at Bear Stearns. He was one of the, Alan Greenberg, when Donald Trump was in financial difficulty, he bailed him out.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. So, I mean, he's dead now, but here's a guy that loved bridge. I mean, absolutely loved it. Was a very avid player and was pretty good himself in his own right. So,
and doing magic and everything then, too. For those people who don't know Ace Greenberg, that you might know, of course, the Kaufman and Greenberg Association, that Richard Kaufman was in association with him, and they'd publish a lot of books and things together.
Yeah, and at one point they dissolved their partnership.
Yeah, but he was always interested in magic, certainly. You say Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, I mean, they're some of the most financially stable people in the globe. And when you're playing with these guys, then do you do tricks for them also occasionally? And
I do.
What kind? If you can't fool them with cards.
No, I didn't say I couldn't fool them with cards.
Okay.
That's not what I said. I can't. You absolutely can fool them and fool them badly, but you have to fool them with stuff that's
a mathematical trick as opposed to a slide?
No, slide's fine. A mathematical's fine, but you can't do anything that's transparent. As in an Elmsley count where it's face up and they see the same card twice. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm. I was showing a guy once something with an invisible deck, and he knew a lot about cards, and he was just saying, first thing was, those cards look awful thick, you know.
Yeah, well.
There were like two cards, obviously, back to back, but with an invisible deck. But
is that how that works?
Well,
I never knew how it worked.
Well, this is a magic podcast. I guess I could say that a couple of times. I interrupted you. You were saying, so these guys, you can fool them. If
you just have to be like Juan Tamariz and layer it. If you layer it, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to really, really understand the human psychology behind a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that respect, they're like anybody else. You can fool them, but you have to. Well, I've been doing it for over 40 years, almost 40 years of doing magic for bridge players. So, and I have two of the best in the world I work with. So if I want to know if a new trick is any good, I just go show the two best players in the world, two of the best. And if it gets past them, then I feel pretty good that it's going to be okay.
Yeah, I would think so then too.
Yeah.
Going back to something else that you had said a little bit earlier, which ties in also the column that you're writing, and we were talking earlier about, off air, about how to get better service at a restaurant. And I remember you saying some time ago, telling me about that you should say to the waiter or waitress, once you see their name, that, say, I've been looking for you. Would you go ahead with that recommendation of the story?
Well, there are a couple of ways. One of the best is if you know their name beforehand.
Oh, before they come to the table.
Before they come and make sure that and call them by name. It's a really powerful way. Another really good technique, one that works just as well, is let's say go to ABC restaurant, but I know ABC is owned by Scott Wells.
Mm-hmm.
So when the waiter comes up, I say, is Scott here tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Well, most of the time he is not.
Mm-hmm.
if he is, you say that's great because you send him by, and when he comes by, you say, Scott, I've heard so much about your restaurant. I'm really glad to be here, and you're doing a great job. The preference is that he's not there.
Okay.
If Scott is not there, when they say he's not, say, oh, doggone it, I was hoping he was going to be here. Would you mind, and you reach in, you pull out a business card, would you give this to him? I'm a friend of his. I haven't seen him in a long time. And just tell him I stopped in and said hello. You don't even know him.
Right.
You've never met him.
Right.
So friend is a little bit of a misspeak. But think about it from the waiter's standpoint.
Yeah.
What did the waiter just see? He doesn't know you. He doesn't know who you are or what you're about.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows that you are
a friend of the
good
owners.
Friends of the owners. So you're going to get great service. I will tell you, I'll speak a little bit cryptically here just because I think it's best. Because I don't feel comfortable discussing the exact peoples and why fours and everything. But I'll give you the gist of the story.
Okay.
There was an old man who needed a job in a casino in Las Vegas, way past his prime, but he needed a job.
Mm-hmm.
Owner of this casino knew him very well and owed this guy big time, favor-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to the owner and he said, look, I need a job. I need a job in the dice pit. I need medical insurance. Guy hired him. So imagine he comes to work and nobody likes him. All these younger people in the pit.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've got to split their tips with this old guy who they don't know.
Yeah.
They have no idea who he is or what he's about. They're not friendly to him at all.
Mm-hmm.
They're really, really unfriendly. One day he's working the pit. Everybody's being unfriendly. The owner of the casino's girlfriend comes running up to him. Billy Bob, so glad to see you. By the way, his name wasn't Billy Bob, but I'm not going to say what his name was.
And she gives him a big old hug.
Big old hug. And as she's hugging him, she leans in and whispers in his ear, maybe things will be better now. And walks away.
Yeah.
Well, now, if you have any smarts at all, and you're working the dice table, and the owner of the casino's girlfriend comes up and gives some old man a hug and says, we're really glad you're back working for us, mm-hmm. be nice to him.
Yeah.
Because there's something about him that you don't know. He has more juice than you do.
Sure.
Because if he didn't have juice, he wouldn't have had the job.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's the same. That's kind of where I got the idea on knowing the owner about
right.
and the restaurant from that story.
You were saying though just before that the other story, as far as knowing the waiter or the server's name before they come to the
right.
table. By doing that, you're going to say, "Oh, you were the person I'm supposed to ask for because yeah. I get exceptional service. I was told to ask for your table."
Yeah, because what you say is. When they walk up, you say, are you John? And you know beforehand their name is John. And they mm-hmm. say, yeah. So thank God. Am I ever glad to see you? Some friends I ate here a couple of weeks ago, they said the food was really good. And they said, if we wanted to have good, you know, a good meal, come in and be sure and ask for you. I'm so glad you're here.
Mm-hmm.
And you pretty much own them. I had, on the flip side, we had one place we used to go to a bunch of magicians and I had this waitress that was awful. She was horrible. And there were 12 of us one night. And we'd gone in there to eat dinner, and she never did come. And I went up and got a Coke at the bar. And I came back, and she walked up to the table, and there were 12 of us. And she said, what's the problem? Pointed her finger at me. She said, what's the problem? I said, there's no problem. I said, yeah, there's a problem. She said, I want to know why you told my friend and coworker I was a bad waitress. I said, time out. stop right now.
Mm-hmm.
If your friend and coworker said that I referred to you as a bad waitress, he's a liar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you right now, I did not tell your friend and coworker that you were a bad waitress. I did not say that. And I resent the fact that he would even say such a thing. What I said was you're the worst waitress I've ever seen in my life. I did not say you were bad. That's what I said. Now, did you have anything else you wanted to discuss with me? And she said, no. I said, okay, thank you very much. I don't recommend saying that.
But that was one way. That's one angle.
That's not a good idea. Anybody young out there, don't do that. That was a bad idea.
You can save experience. Now, you're going to be featured coming up in an issue of Magic Magazine. Is that right?
I'm not going to say I'm going to be featured.
Well, you're going to have an article about yourself somewhere.
Not about me. It's something I wrote about somebody else.
And can you tell us, because you said there were some analogies that this guy had that relate to magicians.
I have been a big fan for years and strongly believe that magicians have a bad mistake of just reading books on magic and not stepping outside the genre. And I'm a big fan of music mm-hmm. for inspiration. Specifically, I'm a big fan of country western music.
And both types, country and western.
Yeah. And the songwriters behind it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a few weeks ago, I was in my office and I was watching a YouTube clip of a old-time country singer. He's 78. He's in the Country Western Hall of Fame. His name's Bill Anderson. Whispering Bill Anderson. And I watched him do some things on this video where he literally sucked an audience in and put him in the palm of his hand and owned the room better than any magician I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn more about him.
That inspired you to reach out and try and find him.
Yeah, so I found his email address and got a hold of him and then got a hold of him on the phone and read some books about him and some of his friends and wrote a very extensive article about some of the things that he did as far as from an entertainer standpoint, what his background is, and Stan's going to publish it. So there's nothing in the article about being a magician, but there's everything in the article about being an entertainer. I learned a lot from him. A lot.
Can you tell one story?
Sure. 50 years ago, he lost a guitar. Don't know if it was stolen, misplaced, mishandled, but it came up missing.
Okay.
Very nice guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And back last summer, guy pawned it at a pawn shop in Phoenix.
After all that time?
Never came. I don't know if you know how pawn shops work. Do you know how pawn works?
I have purchased things at pawn shops.
Have you ever pawned anything?
I haven't, but you have to pay it back within a certain time or you lose it, right?
So the way a pawn shop works is, let's say that you take an item in to have it pawned, and the guy gives you $50.
Yep.
You have 30 days or 60 days to
reclaim it.
To either pay it back with the interest mm-hmm. or come in and pay the interest and get another 30 days. It's almost usury in nature.
Yeah.
But the guy never came back. He pawned his guitar and so once you don't come back and reclaim the
then
ticket,
they can sell it. Right.
Then it belongs to the pawn shop
right.
owner. So
right.
now the guitar owns to this guy. So he's getting ready to sell it. Well, when he looks inside the guitar, sees Bill Anderson's name in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was a country western buff, and he found Bill Anderson and got a hold of him and found out that this guitar actually belonged to Bill Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Contacted him, and so the question is, if you were Bill Anderson, or if it was you, and let's say you'd had a set of silver cups
mm-hmm.
that were stolen 50 years ago, and you find mm-hmm. you get a chance
to get them
you
back.
Found out a guy's got them, what would you do?
We'd want to get them back.
I
You buy it back. Say, how much can I pay you to get it back?
I say, you know what? If that really belonged to you, I'll just give it back to you. If it's really a guitar, mm-hmm. would you be willing to pay the shipping to have it shipped back?
Sure. I'd do that and more. What else can I do for you?
What else would you do?
I would fly you out here to come, or I'll come and get them from you, or I'll fly you out here to see him in a concert and give him great seats and bring the guitar with you. Something like that.
You're closer than you think, but you're still a long ways away. What he did was he didn't see it as just getting the guitar back. He flew the guy and his wife from Phoenix, Arizona to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Took him to dinner. Took him backstage at the Grand Ole Opry before he was going to perform.
Mm-hmm.
When he got ready to perform, he told the story from the stage. Had them come up on stage and had them give the guitar back to him on stage.
Hmm.
To a standing ovation of 4,400 people, where the tagline is, look, your first time on the Grand Ole Opry and you got a standing ovation, that's better than I did.
Hmm.
That's one example.
So he's putting the focus on somebody else rather than him because he's had enough of the spotlight.
He didn't care who gets the spotlight as long as he gets the applause.
Right.
His only concern, and he told me this, is your only job is to entertain. Doesn't matter, whatever you think you are, you're not a singer, you're not a songwriter, you're not a dancer, you're an entertainer, mm-hmm. period. Your job, 100%, is to entertain, and that's what he does. And he does it as well as anyone I've ever seen.
And you said also, he told you it was a team effort, basically, whether it's
like baseball.
People from the band, or...
Mm-hmm. It's like baseball game, doesn't matter who scores the run as long as you win the game.
Yeah.
So he didn't care if they got the applause, he got it. Sideman gets it. Mm-hmm. Kids get it. You know,
Great.
Yeah.
When might that article be coming out?
It's in June.
In June?
Scheduled for June.
Well, I'll tell you, and we're starting to wrap up over here. There is one more issue that I'd like to talk about because that you had a brain tumor some time ago and then had to go through a severe operation to have it removed, and that was how many years ago?
It will be 3 years, August the 29th.
And how was that diagnosed?
I came down, I became deaf in my right ear.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the doctor, and the doctor, they had the form, and they said, reason for visit? I said, because my girlfriend made me. And went in and did an MRI and found I had a brain tumor about the size of a baseball.
Holy moly.
In fact, there's a kind of a funny story about that. August the 29th, was a Thursday.
Okay.
And it was the start of the TAOM in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Thompson was on the bill. And I had talked to Johnny. Johnny's a friend of mine. I had made arrangements that I was going to pick him up at the airport.
Yeah.
But this brain tumor thing came up and this surgery, and it kind of screwed up the day a little bit because I was under 12 and a half hours. And so, but I was still cognizant enough to know that, you know, because we started at 6, and so whenever I woke up, the surgeon is there, and I said, I wake up, and I'm talking to him, and I said, listen, I need to be gone for about an hour. I've just come out from, intensive care.
Yeah.
I've just come out for 12-hour brain surgery.
Brain surgery.
And he said, I'm sorry, what? I said, I need to be gone for about an hour. I said, my friend, Johnny Thompson, a magician from Las Vegas.
It's at the airport. I got to pick him up.
It's at the airport. I've got to pick him up. So what I need to do is I just need to leave. I'll go to the airport. I pick him up. I drive him and drop him off at the hotel, and I'll come right back to the hospital. I won't be gone more than an hour. He said, you can't leave. I said, you don't know how big Johnny Thompson is in the magic world, do you? He said, Mr. Beck, you can't leave. And I looked at him. I said, you know, you're just a son. Now, I never cuss.
Mm-hmm.
But the drugs made me say it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this guy just saved my life, and that's what I said to him. But it was pretty funny. But
they had operated on you and successfully removed that, and then you continued then on your drug regimen and everything's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I was
100% fine now.
I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty close.
Yeah.
I mean, but I was I was in the hospital for a few days. In fact, there was a guy that was there that was one of the nurses. Said, you're a magician. I was at the TAOM last year and saw you. That's at 2 in the morning. He said, could you show me a trick? I'm out in the hallway too, with a little dressing gown on.
Yeah.
I'm like, I did him a trick.
You did?
Well.
In your gown and on the hallway?
Absolutely. Yeah, I did. And I did it with a smile on my face because you know something? You don't want to make a nurse mad. I mean, this nurse, right. You know, they control the drugs and everything. You want to keep those people happy.
And keep the drugs flowing.
And keep the drugs flowing. That's right.
Let me finish up just with one last story, which I think is pretty funny. Again, going back to your restaurant days, a story you told me about doing a rubber band trick, and somebody said, well, whenever, let me show you mine. And you remember that story?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah. I worked at a restaurant called the Embassy Suites Hotel. And it was a Sunday. I did their Sunday brunch, and I used to do Crazy Man handcuffs.
Yeah.
This couple came in, this really hot woman, and this guy was with her, and the waiter came over and said, table 13 wants to see some magic. And so about that time the girl got and left, and I walked over and did some tricks and found out the guy's first name was Bill. And that's all I knew was his name was Bill. And he said, what are your rubber bands for? I said, it's a trick I do mainly for children. It wasn't a trick I typically would do for adults.
Yeah.
He said, let me see. I want to see it. So I did. I did it for him, even though I didn't want to. Then he said, I have a trick. You want to see it? Now, a lot of people will disagree with this about whether or not you should allow.
I always do.
And the answer is, I believe in always letting them too as well for two reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I get paid by the hour.
Exactly.
And if they're doing a trick, I'm not working. Mm-hmm. I'm watching.
That's right.
And it makes them feel good.
And they feel good.
Because if they have the nerve to do it. And plus, you never know.
You
might see something that's pretty good. If they start to do the 21 card trick, I'll kind of try to wave them off.
Yeah.
But so the guy does his trick. Well, when he does the trick, he doesn't do it just pretty good. He does it great.
It was a torn restore. No, it was a ring on rubber band.
And when he finished, I said, that's really good. I said, that's in a book by a guy named Michael Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy had from back east, and he had kind of an attitude, and he had a little bit of an accent. And, of course, I'm from the South. I'm from Oklahoma.
And a little bit of an accent.
A little bit. And he said, it's my trick. And when he said, it's my trick, I said, well, if it's your trick, your last name had better be Kalush. At which point he pulled out his business card, and it said, Bill Kalush. And we've been friends ever since. That's how we met. But yeah.
It's a great story.
And I had no idea. I mean, I knew the trick. I knew who it was by, but I never met him. But yeah, it was pretty funny.
That's great. Well, Norm, thank you very much. I appreciate the stories and the insight and everything. Wow, a lot of really good stuff there packed into this podcast. My name of my podcast is called The Magic Words. My question to you is, what is important to you? What's your philosophy? What's your magic word, phrase?
Two rules in life. Rule number one, never tell people everything you know.
And with that, we will close. That was Norman Beck for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out. Well, thank you, Norm, for your time. That was a lot of fun and pretty enlightening, and I learned a lot there then, too. I hope that you, the listeners, did as well. It was a real pleasure getting to spend a little bit more time with you, my friend, and I look forward to our next visit.
And now it's time for our product review. First up is Canic. This is produced by Sans Mind and the mind of Nicholas Lawrence. In this DVD that is provided, you get not only the DVD, but also the gimmick that's necessary to essentially borrow a soda can or find one that's lying around. You just break off the tab And then by placing the tab in your hand, then you just tap it a couple times and it reattaches itself. You can hand the can back out for examination, both before and after, and the tab is still attached to the top of the can. There are several different methods that they discuss in the DVD on how to make this work, how to prepare the can or not prepare the can, how to do it so that you have one prepared beforehand, or you can do it, as they would say, more organically, in which that it can be literally one just that is borrowed or one that has just recently been in use that someone hands you. They also suggest that you can carry the gimmick that is necessary in your wallet. I don't necessarily recommend that because I think you might understand that it might do some damage to your credit cards. I think you can probably figure out what that means. But there's more to it, actually, than just what you think might be the gimmick in order to make this work. And it is very clever, and I do like it. It is something that, although, of course, in the presentation that they show in the performance, that the people are amazed, and, well, they should be, because the thing was apparently on, you've torn it off, and then you put it back on. Many of the things that I like in this is just the way that it looks and the handling of it, which is very clean, but also it can be done in your hand or in the spectator's hand. And not only can they hold the torn-off tab, and then you hold the can and put that back on, or they can actually hold the can, and you can hold the tab, and it can be put back on. So there are a variety of ways of performing this, and so I like the little different nuances that they have. This is a pretty cool little gimmick, and it is something that can be carried around, or if you're going to be able to prepare it in advance, you can do that. It says that you can do this in an impromptu situation. And if you try the first version, I don't think it's quite as improvisational from the standpoint that you have to carry around this gimmick can, but in the other methods that they teach you, you can do this by carrying the gimmick, and you can make it work with borrowed cans. Again, that is Canic by Sans Magic and Nicholas Lawrence. Next up is something that I had seen advertised in a couple of magazines, including Vanish magazine, which, by the way, I highly recommend. It is a free magazine that you can download. It's fantastic that Paul Romani does on a regular basis. Anyhow, that the ad Blaze was a full-page ad and looked quite interesting. Essentially, that you can have a card freely selected, signed, and the cards are placed back into the box. And then a piece of flash paper is ignited, and you throw it towards the deck, and suddenly there's a big hole that's burned on the box. You remove all the cards, and they can see that the hole is plainly burned on both sides of the box. In other words, it went all the way through. However, none of the cards are damaged nor burned, except as you spread through the card, you see that one card has been singed around the edges, and whenever that they remove the card, they turn it over, see that it is their signed card, and they can keep it. So it's a pretty darn strong effect. I like it a lot. It's something that looks like you can do in certain situations. And I say in certain situations because of the flash paper that you have to use. There are certain places, like where there might be a smoke detector or a ban on smoking in buildings or whatever, that they see this flash, that you probably wouldn't be able to do it, because that might set off the smoke alarm, or the fire department might show up, and you don't want that to happen then either. So it's one of those things that you have to kind of clear beforehand if you're going to be doing it. They give you a few different methods for doing this. That is, specifically, if you want to do it in a close-up situation, which is the bulk of what the routines are. In fact, there are two routines, one called Blaze, the other one is called Monogamish, and then the third, which is called Boom, which is more of a stage presentation. And there again, that there is some flash that happens, but it's inside of a paper bag. But nevertheless, that there is some burning that goes on and a little bit of smoke. With Monogamish, there really isn't any flash at all. There is just some smoke. Now, with this DVD, there are the necessary cards that are gimmicked that I think are very well made, and very cool, too, by the way. I haven't seen any cards that were made exactly like these before in order to effectively make this trick work and be so strong. in order for the cleanup to take place. It's beautiful the way they have these guys have put this together. The trick again is called Blaze, and it's by Les French Twins. How's that? Les French Twins, and that is Tony and Jordan, and these two guys together really put together a good DVD and some good ideas with these three separate routines. But the things that don't come with it is that this version that I got is version number 3, and the box of cards did not come with it. It's no big deal because I have plenty of empty card boxes, and I'm sure that you do too, and you could make the necessary gimmick easily enough. Also, for the trick called Monogamish, it recommends having a smoke kind of a thing that you can put into your coat and your jacket and comes out of your outside coat pocket, and that smoke thing is not included either. So that's another gimmick that you would have to purchase. You don't necessarily need that, but that really does sell it at the right moment whenever that you place the card in your pocket, and at the right moment whenever your pocket starts to smoke a little bit, then you reach in and pull out the burned card. So you really don't have to use any fire or anything for that to happen, but you do have to have that smoke gimmick, and it does look really cool. There are some other kinds of smoke gimmicks. You wouldn't necessarily have to get the one that they'd recommended. My point being is that that's not included either, but the necessary cards that you would need are included with this DVD, and the trick itself is something that, in playing around with this, it's a fun thing to do. Here again, it's a do-it-yourself project. This is a little DIY that you have to put together, and that just like in the previous one with the trick Canic that I just reviewed, that's a little DIY also that you have to make your own gimmick. It provides you with the necessary gimmicks that you need to put together, but it does take a little bit of time to make what you need. In this particular case, with Blaze, you have to make several of these cards in advance, so this way, whenever that they sign it, you're handing them out, so you lose that card every time. Not a big deal, but it's something that you hand out that the person gets to keep. So, this is really one that I recommend. It's a pretty cool trick. It's again called Blaze by Les French Twins. Our final review for this podcast is another DVD set. Actually, the first two were individual DVDs. This is a two-DVD set called The Magic of Suzanne, The Castle Act, Volumes 1 and 2. Suzanne was a 2010 Close-Up Magician of the Year by the Magic Castle, and she is well-deserving of it. I will, first of all, say up front that I'm a little bit biased because I do like Suzanne a lot. In fact, you can go back to the archives here or do a search for Suzanne in the Magic Word podcast, and you can hear when I have spoken with her, and she's had a lot of really interesting things to say. She's quite a woman and has led quite a life. In fact, that it's part of this one of the DVDs that Anthony Asimov does an outstanding interview with Suzanne in which she talks about her 30-year career. So she goes into a lot more detail on what she has done. In the conversation that I had had with her on the podcast, it was more conversational, kind of like what she's doing and her philosophy of performing and other things like that. So I think that this is a nice supplement to what you could hear on the podcast with Suzanne. But as for the tricks, again, she does do her castle act, and that most of it is explained. And in fact, there is a deck switcher that she sells, but she also explains how to make the thing. It is a little bit difficult, and it's a really good deck switcher. So you can buy one from her, or you can kind of fiddle around and make your own if you wish. But the one signature trick of hers, which is a Band-Aid trick, which is called A Mother's Love, is not tipped in this. And the reason being is that this was a Joe Givens idea and something that she had gotten the original inspiration then from that and then made it her own. But what she does talk about is how that you can make a trick, which may be a classic, into a signature trick of your own, and how it is that you should customize to fit you and your personality, so that way nobody can do what you do. This is a great trick and a variation that actually had fooled Penn & Teller on their Penn & Teller Foolish TV show. Really good trick, as are the rest of the things that are on the Castle Act here. She talks about her cups and balls and other kinds of things, and it is a two-DVD set. A lot of stuff is contained in here, not only her presentation, but also her philosophy of performing, and there are a lot of really good details in here. One of the things I like also is that you can choose to have the commentary on or off. So during the performance, you can go back in and hear what she's thinking as she is actually performing on this, because she has two or three different performances of the same show, but different people, and obviously different things are happening. And so she talks about how that you can react to people on the fly and how that you can improvise basically in order to get to keep the audience on your side, get them on your side, and keep them on your side. She is an excellent entertainer, a good performer, and this is a well-produced set of DVDs, and I would highly recommend The Magic of Suzanne, The Castle Act, Volumes 1 and 2.
Remember to support your magic dealer when you go to your brick-and-mortar magic shop or your favorite online place when you buy these Murphy's Magic Supplies tricks. And I also suggest, of course, that you check our download store. Since you're already at the website now, just go ahead and take a click and then take a look, and you can place your order, and you can get some of these things downloaded immediately, and some of them will be mailed within about 3 days or so. So, again, thank you very much, and support your local magic dealer. Well, this is pretty much about a wrap for this week, but I do want to point out that next week I'll be traveling to Buffalo, New York, actually Batavia, which is outside of Buffalo, where I'll be attending the Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic. And this will be a lot of fun, and I plan to report with daily updates and let you guys see and hear, I should say, see with your ears, some of the goings-on that are happening in and around this epic event that happens annually out in Western State, New York. A lot of fun with just about 200 magicians from all over the world. And so I have a lot of friends coming in, and we plan on getting together and chatting. So for that period of time, we'll hear some daily updates, and also hopefully for weeks after that, I'll have some longer reports that I can give you. That will be some chats with some of these guys who will sit down and talk for a little bit longer time. And if you want to start to get a little bit excited about what you're going to be hearing, you might go back to the archives here at themagicwordpodcast.com and search for the FFFF or 4F convention, and you can hear a few of what I had recorded from previous years. It's a whole heck of a lot of fun, and I think you'll enjoy what I had reported before and what's going to be coming up. Anyhow, that's coming up next week. Before we close, I want to welcome two new friends of the Magic Word. Welcome to Chris Fowler and to Steve Sabo. Thank you guys very much for your financial contribution to the Magic Word podcast, and we certainly do appreciate it, because that helps to defray the cost that we have for so many of our monthly expenses in helping to produce this podcast that we deliver free to everyone. So if you guys would like to join the newest friends and become the newest friends and get a shout out here also on the Magic Word, then scroll on over to themagicwordpodcast.com and you can hit the Donate Now button, and you can go through PayPal that way and give a one-time donation, or you can give an ongoing donation, or you can also go to patreon.com/themagicword and you can support us there on a monthly basis or one-time basis. Your financial help is definitely appreciated. And also that we are reaching that point where we're almost at 1,000 people for our Facebook page, friends. And if you'd like to join us and hit that magic number, please go on over to facebook.com/themagicwordpodcast, where you can like us there. And you can follow us on Twitter at @magicwordpod. And I think that's a wrap for this week. So until next time, stay well, get booked, and remember Norm's two pieces of advice. Never tell people everything you know. This is Scotty out.